In re the Marriage of Berg.
Good morning. May it please the court, Patricia Novotny on behalf of Lou Berg. Honestly, this case...
Do you wish to reserve any time?
Oh, I'm sorry. I will. 4 minutes, please.
4 minutes?
Yes. Thank you. This case tempts me to cynicism, quite honestly. It seems to me that two people with a prenuptial agreement in Seattle should be able to get divorced without having to spend $500,000. The party on the other side, Doris, claims that we have brought challenges to fact-based decisions by the trial court. I wish that was the case. In fact, the trial court's decisions were not fact-based. Accusations are not facts. Innuendo is not evidence. And these were the substance of Doris's trial presentation, and you can tell that just by comparing their list of witnesses. Doris presented her own testimony, most of which, in your review of the record, she says over and over again she doesn't know anything. She doesn't understand this. She doesn't remember that. She presented her best friend, and she presented an appraiser. Lou presented himself and an appraiser, and, of course, the appraisals, the property values, aren't challenged on appeal. He also presented three CPAs, an attorney prepared to sue his company and the community, and he presented a property manager testifying to the value of Redmond Ridge. Doris didn't even cross-examine the property manager. He presented all of those witnesses, and all Doris did was try to cast suspicion. That's not evidence. And unfortunately, this strategy worked, as you can tell from the court's oral ruling, when it made decisions based upon the argument made by Doris that the promissory notes somehow weren't proper because only the maker signed them. Well, that's how every promissory note I've ever signed looks as well. In other words, the trial court did not base its decision on facts, but rather on these arguments that were made by Doris. Unfortunately, the same tactic has been employed in the financial declarations, where Doris insinuates that the promissory notes to the lenders, that somehow these were not valid promises to pay. There's no evidence that that's the case. And in fact, Doris knows that it's not the case because one of these investors is their daughter, her mother, Lou's mother, and friends of their family, not just Lou's friends, but her friends as well. And he has paid on those notes, as we said in the financial declaration, and proof of that was presented to Doris yesterday in the form of copies of the checks. In other words, this trial was not conducted from Doris's perspective as a fact-finding contest, but rather as a fact-obscuring contest. And that is the most central reality that has to be understood and on which all of our claims basically rest. If you look, for example, at the claim regarding Redmond Ridge, you can search the record high and low. There is no evidence that Redmond Ridge is worth anything, that it's worth anything because the mortgages exceed the value of the property, and in fact, the evidence was uncontradicted that the investors in Redmond Ridge were having to compensate the management group for costs that they were incurring. Nowhere in the record is there evidence that there was value to this property. The only evidence was the amount invested in the property 5 years earlier, 6 years earlier, before the real estate market tanked. This is what's so troubling to me about this, is that the propositions that Doris cast suspicion on are really not controversial. The idea that these promissory notes were somehow invalid or not real is not controversial. Where did the company get the money to do its business? From the investors. If she had doubted that, she could have called any one of these investors in to testify. Lou produced their promissory notes. There they were. She didn't actually impeach that testimony. She just argued, well, why should we believe it? Well, why shouldn't we? That is, the trial court did not have a reason to disbelieve the evidence that Lou presented because Doris didn't give the court a reason. She argued, she insinuated, but she didn't even reach out and produce evidence that was readily available, such as testimony from one of the family friends who had invested in the company. So Redmond Ridge had no value. The Crown Finance, there was no question as to the validity of these promissory notes, really. There was no question. This is the other uncontroversial point on which Doris repeatedly argued. She claimed somehow that Crown Finance, unique among all lenders during this period, somehow was going to be able to collect on the loans it had made that were secured by real estate. Now, no one testified to that. In fact, the three CPAs all testified to the contrary. This is a hard time for any lender whose loan is secured by real estate. This is obviously just common knowledge as well. Doris didn't produce any evidence to the contrary. It was uncontradicted that most of these loans were uncollectible. And it's common sense as well. He stood in second or third position to primary lenders. So basically, we're asking the court, this court, to correct these gross errors and to return this for a new trial based on the facts. And I'll remind you, not only did Lou produce all of those witnesses, he wanted to produce two others once it became clear on the eve of trial that Doris was going to claim this fantastical value to Crown Finance. He wanted a trial on the facts, and that's what we're here to ask this court to order. And I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith representing the respondent, Doris Berg. That's quite a factual closing argument that we've just heard. And unless the court has any questions, I just want to try to put up one document that was the basis for the there was certainly a dispute about the value of Crown Finance. And the court relied on the most recent balance sheet prepared by Mr. Berg's accountant, and I am not going to be able to do this. I'm just going to tell you about it. That never try the documents. This is Exhibit 227. This is a balance sheet that was prepared in March of 2011, which is about 4 months before trial. It shows the accounts, and it shows what Crown Finance found was the doubtful accounts. Now, at trial, Mr. Berg testified that, in fact, 80% of these accounts could not be collected. But here we see. Yes, it is. Yes, it's Exhibit 227. And this was what the court relied upon in finding the book value for Crown Finance. This also addresses this idea that somehow there's an argument being made that, the court didn't believe that all of these loans were being made by the friends and relatives of the parties. Well, that's not true. If you look here, there's notes payable to others, $1.2 million, which is taken as a deduction from these amounts. I mean, it is simply not true that the court did not take these amounts into account in valuing this asset, and in valuing this asset at the same value that it itself had been valued on a book value basis by Mr. Berg himself. Both Mr. Berg at RP 409 and his accountant expert witness, Mr. Kessler, at RP 139 and 40 admitted that book value was a completely appropriate way to establish the value of this asset. And Judge Canova said, I don't have a reason to value this at any other. He didn't take the value of the wife, which would have made it at a much higher amount, and he didn't take the value of the husband, which would have said that essentially the business was worthless. Now, what are we left with? We're left with a situation in which, in fact, Mr. Berg received over half of the property. We have raised as a cross appeal, which this court doesn't need to address if it simply affirms, as we think that it should, the fact that the court took as a note payable the amounts that Mr. Berg over $1 million had incurred as a loan in paying down this line of credit to the Bank of America, which he did in the midst of this divorce in what appears to be an effort to eliminate any community property interest. So all he would have left was this separate property, which under the prenuptial agreement that the court, in a discretionary, fact-based decision, decided was not enforceable, he would have been left with just the separate property that he could have taken and left the community essentially with no property at all. Yes, so he took, and nobody could understand why he had done this. It was totally inexplicable why he would have cashed out these amounts, made no attempt to negotiate with the Bank of America, and paid these amounts, incurred this $450,000 tax liability, unless his intent was to rely on this prenuptial agreement and essentially destroy any community assets. The court didn't allow him to do that. That was a discretionary, fact-based decision that was well within the trial court's discretion. And the argument that you have heard here today is you should have believed me. Well, Judge Canova clearly didn't believe Mr. Berg and his claims of poverty and his claim that this business that had paid these parties $200,000 a year for years and years somehow had no value at this point. And this court isn't in a position and should not accept his argument either. This is a completely fact-based appeal. There is no basis for reversal of either the extremely fair property division or the maintenance award. And unless the court has further questions, I'll cede the remainder of my time and just end with a request that we be awarded attorney's fees on appeal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't know if Ms. Smith just meant to cede me her time. That would be nice. Because I am so frustrated by that, because I actually would like to respond at length to these really, again, just accusations. I'm going to have to pick and choose. Stephen Kessler at RP 139-140 did not say book value was an appropriate value for this company. He testified to the contrary. I reread that last night in a kind of disbelief that assertion was being made. He said, you start at book value, what it says on the paper, the thing that you present when you try to get loans and things like that. He said, but then you have to take into account reality, the fact that we're in a real estate market crash, and the fact that these loans are uncollectible, the testimony by Lou Berg, uncontradicted. He went through loan after loan. This person hasn't paid for 6 months. This person has been foreclosed on. This has been sold on a short sale. The evidence was that Crown Finance was worth nothing. That's what the evidence was. And the accusations don't change that. And the trial court, in a way that was mystifying to me, didn't look back to the evidence. Some of the things the trial court did in the promissory note one was frankly the most, obvious, that makers sign promissory notes, not the bar or the lender as well, and I submitted a form for that. There were other misperceptions, misconceptions that the trial court relied on. For example, Redmond Ridge. The trial court said this is community property. There was no evidence of how it was purchased. In fact, the evidence was clear. Even Doris acknowledged that this was bought with Lou's Panos note proceeds and that she was given 20% of it, that it was titled 20% and 80%. The trial court just seemed to ignore the evidence in favor of the accusations that was made. And I do want to say something. Normally I wouldn't talk about the financial declarations, but they, for attorney's fees, my client is the one, in fact, in dire straits here. This is the other thing. There's no finding beyond the court's cursory finding about the maintenance award. And it is simply unsupported by substantial evidence. She has a house, she has her retirement, she has Social Security, and she has all of these investment accounts, which do not appear on her financial declarations. But common sense dictates she's making something off of that $1.7 million that she received. Where is that? My client's financial declaration is completely accurate. He has sold these properties. He's paid the costs of sale. He's supported himself. He's paying her $4,000 a month in maintenance. And he has purchased these other, and he's paid back these investors. And the reality is that he is the one who's losing money here. She has no need. She's completely self-sufficient. And there's no evidence to the contrary there. He is, in fact, the one who needs attorney's fees in this case. There was one other glaring error in the financial declaration that I wanted to address. But it's not coming to me right off the top of my head, so. Oh, I know, the Camino Island properties, neither of those are rented. And so the insinuation that somehow he's not disclosing when he is, and she's clearly not disclosing. Again, this is a trial by innuendo, and we're just asking that this court send this back for fact-finding, what Lou wanted in the first place and that the trial court deprived him of. If nothing else, at least Redmond Ridge should be rebalanced and the maintenance should go away because Doris does not need maintenance. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.